Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in this program, we're going to discuss two powerful documentaries about the criminal justice system and life in prison in the U.S. One covers the impact of Florida's draconian two strikes law, while the other focuses on pregnant prisoners in Alabama and what happens to them and their newborns. But first, the breaking news that California Senator Dianne Feinstein died last night. We'll discuss a bit about her legacy and what her passing means for both California and U.S. politics going forward. And it comes at a moment when the federal government is poised to shut down on October 1st if Congress doesn't pass funding legislation for the next fiscal year. So we'll cover the far-reaching impact of a shutdown on millions of American families. To get the latest on all of this, we are pleased to be joined by Arthur Delaney, senior reporter covering politics and the economy for the Huffington Post. Good to have you back on the show, Arthur.
Thanks for having me.
So, Arthur, let's start with Dianne Feinstein's death last night. Just briefly, what do you make of her legacy?
Well, a lot of the conversation about Feinstein this year has been about her decline, and now it's all about her legacy, which was huge, as everyone agrees. Two major things that I have focused on are her authorship of the assault weapons ban in the 1990s and her role in releasing a report from the Senate Intelligence Committee that exposed mistreatment of detainees in the war on terror, revealed information about enhanced interrogation techniques, you know, essentially torture. And these are major things that have had a lasting impact on politics. To this day, the assault weapons ban is something Democrats still want to bring back.
Yes, a really powerful legacy nationwide. And then, of course, here in California, she has a more local legacy in the San Francisco Bay Area as well, but quite a towering figure. And of course, she died in the middle of her final term. Her term was expected to was going to expire at the end of next year. What does it mean now for the U.S. Senate and our federal government going forward to have her seat so suddenly vacant here?
It's a big deal for the Senate, where Democrats hold a slim majority. They'll have one fewer member now. You know, they still retain the majority, but it's a situation where every vote counts. And so the seat being vacant for however long it will be vacant could have a significant impact on nominations and other legislation. I don't think it will have an impact on the government shutdown that everyone's looking at, but it's something that the majority leader has to contend with for sure.
And there are, of course, a number of firsts with Senator Feinstein. She was the first woman to serve as a U.S. senator from California, the first woman to chair the Senate Intelligence Committee and the Senate Rules Committee, and the first woman to be top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. So it's quite a legacy to fulfill. And Governor Newsom now has a responsibility to appoint a replacement. Are you hearing anything about that replacement? It seems like, given the shutdown and other urgent matters, there's going to be a lot of pressure on the governor to fill this seat. Is that correct?
That will be a major decision for Gavin Newsom. And I am, honestly, I have to admit, I have not followed the replacement sweepstakes closely, except that I know there's jockeying, including among some of the different Democrats who are currently running for Senate in California, which includes Adam Schiff and Barbara Lee. So that's major, and it bears on that Senate race, in addition to Gavin Newsom's stature as a possible presidential candidate himself.
I know the governor said that he plans to appoint a Black woman as a temporary caretaker, I think in recognition of this race that you just referenced between Adam Schiff, Barbara Lee, Katie Porter. So it's quite a primary campaign going on now for that seat, which probably just intensifies. I'm curious about whoever the replacement ends up being, how that person will be able to carry out their duties in the United States Senate. And one of the things that we've heard about is that Republicans would not be willing to seat Feinstein's replacement on the Judiciary Committee, which means Democrats would lose their majority on that committee and not be able to confirm any of President Biden's judicial nominees. Have you heard anything about how this is going to affect the sort of committee politics within the Senate?
That's definitely a theoretical possibility. I have also seen some analysis from someone who is skeptical that that would happen. This person said on Twitter that they thought this was a self-serving theory from Democrats themselves in order to justify the way they had handled her remaining in office for so long in the first place. So I don't know if Republicans will actually follow through on that threat. I haven't seen a Republican say that himself.
All right, so we'll have to stay tuned how that shakes out. And Arthur Delaney, Huffington Post, great to have your thoughts on the passing of Senator Dianne Feinstein, a real giant in California politics and on the national stage, as you referenced. Let's talk a bit about now about this impending shutdown. We're barreling towards it, and it seems like at 12 a.m. on Sunday, we're going to likely get there at this point, given that we haven't seen anything move through Congress. Can you give us up, bring us up to speed on the latest developments on the government shutdown?
Yes, it looks extremely likely. Everyone here thinks it's going to happen. I'm in the House of Representatives right now. Republicans are going to try to put a bill on the floor as soon as half an hour from now. That would be their version of a short-term government funding bill with spending cuts that are dead on arrival in the Senate and would never be accepted by the White House. And yet they can't even agree among themselves. I just talked to several lawmakers who were either against it or weren't disclosing their position or were undecided, more than five, in fact, which is more than enough, should they all go against it, to tank the bill. So we'll see if they actually go through with the vote in order to show that the strategy didn't work, or if they pull it and continue talking among themselves. But even if they somehow passed it, the government would still shut down. It's not a serious effort to get legislation signed into law. It's a internal messaging bill, and the message is really from the Speaker Kevin McCarthy to his conservative critics, who've really hamstrung him from the beginning. This is basically this was all set in motion back in January, where, if you remember, the Speaker going through all those votes to get elected as the leader of the Republicans and promising them that he would do this and that to empower his hard right flank. The chickens have come home to roost, and the open threat being made by people like Matt Gaetz is that if McCarthy puts a bipartisan bill through the House, which ultimately has to happen in order for the government to get funded, then they'll force a no confidence vote in him. So the government will shut down. The only question is for how long and whether Kevin McCarthy can hang on or if he'll lose his job right away.
Well, President Biden was quoted at a fundraiser in San Francisco saying basically that Speaker McCarthy is choosing his job over the government staying open. I think exactly what you're describing here, that he could cut a deal with Democrats and his moderate flank to keep the government open, but doesn't want to have this vote and throw the speakership open into turmoil. So I guess we're all essentially victimized by this power play here in Washington. So if this shutdown happens, can you give us a sense of what the impacts are going to be to things like the country's largest food assistance programs, federally funded preschool, federal college grants and loans, food safety inspections, national parks? I mean, how is this going to affect everyday life for millions of Americans here?
A lot of federal operations continue on autopilot. Like, people won't miss Social Security checks. Medicare will keep going. But the national parks will close, and they've said that they'll lock the gates this time. They didn't last time, and there was some controversy about that decision because people came in and left their garbage all over the place. There are big federal nutrition programs, including SNAP and WIC, that will have money for a short time. And if the shutdown goes on for too long, then millions of people could potentially lose their food subsidy that they use to buy groceries. Customer service at agencies like Social Security Administration and the IRS will definitely be affected. If you're in Washington and you want to go to the National Zoo starting Sunday, forget about it. So there will be massive effects, but it's important to know that they don't like actually turn out all the lights. Federal, a lot of federal personnel are deemed essential and have to come back to work. But a significant chunk will be furloughed without pay. Congress usually pays them back, but it's not a certainty, especially not with these Republicans.
Well, we've been through this before when Republicans have controlled the House of Representatives in years past. Most recently, we had a shutdown just about 5 years ago, the longest shutdown of the federal government that lasted 1 month and was all about Trump wasting money to build his wall. What's different now about this shutdown?
There's a much less coherent policy demand this time. Trump wanted money for a wall on the border and the shutdown went on for weeks and he never got it, and then decided to unilaterally shift funds from the military to start that construction, which never got finished. This time, like we were just saying, Republicans, it's not clear if they even can pass their own messaging bill to say what they to effectively say what their position is. There's nobody to bargain with. Senate Republicans are supporting their version of a short-term funding bill that they'll likely pass this weekend and send over to the House. And Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker, has said he won't bring it up for a vote. The Republican bill would be lower spending levels, essentially reneging on a deal that McCarthy and his lieutenants reached with the White House earlier this year. Remember the debt ceiling drama? They struck a deal to agree on government funding through next year. And now, lo and behold, we're fighting over government funding again. They also want immigration reform that would take rights away from immigrants who are coming to the southern border. And it's just stuff that's not going to fly with the other branches of government. And because of that, it will, you know, even if they passed it, it wouldn't work. You know, we're going to wind up with a shutdown anyway, and eventually something that's bipartisan has to pass the House. It's the only way this can really end. And the hardliners here just refuse to acknowledge that. And they say that, well, if we get tough and we just stand up for our values, then eventually the other two-thirds of the legislative process will bend to our will, which might be compelling if we hadn't done this so many times with these same people over the past several years. It's seen that it never works.
Well, and these people who are on the far right who are forcing this issue, Matt Gaetz from Florida is one of them. I have read that many of them are essentially already seeking their next office. So in some respects, this may be a way for them to burnish their credentials and position themselves for office outside of the House. But you did mention some of their demands, but I'm curious, at the same time, you say they don't really have a coherent ask. Is there anything specific issues? You mentioned a few of them, but I'm wondering if even those hard right sort of burn it all down types actually have a coherent policy agenda that they're hoping to accomplish here, or is this really just performative?
I think there's a lot of it is performative. Even if someone's not seeking higher office, they're getting tons of attention. And when you look at the incoherence of the demands they're making, the quest for attention seems like a likelier motivation than you might have thought. And it's also a show of power internally among Republicans. You know, they've never really liked Kevin McCarthy. And this is a lot to do with his fate as the Republican leader. It has a lot to do with Donald Trump. He's saying, shut it down if you don't get everything you want, which is a strategy that, like I was saying, ignores the structure of our government and the way things are supposed to work, which is, of course, Trump's modus operandi. And these are acolytes of his, and it's chaos. It's chaos, so, and it's nihilism.
And unfortunately, it's our federal government. So if you're just joining us, this is Ethan Elkind. I'm sitting in for Rose Aguilar on Your Calls Media Roundtable. We're joined by Arthur Delaney, senior reporter covering politics and the economy for the Huffington Post. And we'd like to hear from you as well. Will a government shutdown affect your life? What would you like to see happen to try to keep government open? You can join the conversation here. We're at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. So, Arthur, in addition to hearing from these far right members. There are obviously a lot of other more moderate mainstream Republicans who are essentially now being hitched to this horse of government shutdown, which may not be politically advantageous for them. I'm wondering if you've heard about serious pushback from other Republicans within the caucus who are trying to outmaneuver their far right colleagues.
They've been fighting among themselves big time for the past few weeks, and we're talking yelling and cussing at each other in their internal conference meetings. Last week, Kevin McCarthy dropped some F-bombs on them and said, "You think I'm scared of your motion to vacate the chair," which is their mechanism for forcing a no confidence vote. And he said, "File the effing motion." And they still haven't. Partly because even if they do that, there's no plausible substitute for McCarthy. Only today or late last night did we begin to see a name floated. And the name is Tom Emmer, who is a member of McCarthy's leadership team. It makes no sense, really, why he would be more appetizing as a leader to this faction than McCarthy is, because he and McCarthy are close allies. He's the less conservative of the other members of the leadership team. But it would, my understanding is that unless Democrats, for some reason, wanted to intervene and save McCarthy, which we have no reason to think they would, then the no confidence vote, the motion to vacate, just creates chaos. We wind up in the same speaker purgatory that started the year. So it's a road to nowhere, as far as we can tell. Maybe Democrats, in exchange for McCarthy putting a bipartisan bill like the one the Senate's passing, maybe in exchange for putting that on the floor, they would bail him out in a speaker election triggered by Matt Gaetz. But it's something we'll have to watch in the next 7 days.
Well, Arthur, on this subject, what are your contacts on Capitol Hill sort of saying or predicting about Kevin McCarthy's future? Do they think he's going to be able to hang on after this?
He has a lot of people who like him a lot and would point, and he himself would point out that his political demise has been predicted many times this year. People thought he was toast in the speaker race in January, so you can't count him out. He's extremely versatile. He's willing to say something one day and then say the opposite thing a few days later, if that's going to win him the support that he needs. For example, he said a few weeks ago, "We can only open an impeachment inquiry by holding a vote of the House." And, you know, it seemed pretty clear to those of us talking to House members that they didn't have enough votes for that. And so he went and just said, "I hereby declare the impeachment inquiry open." Like, wait a minute, you just said you couldn't do it that way. Never mind. So that's how he operates. He can be very slippery and tough to tackle. So I do not have a crystal ball, and I do think it's worth listening to those who consider him not necessarily on his last life.
Well, certainly he made a lot of promises to a lot of people to get his position, and there's a lot of disgruntled Republicans who are not happy that he's been slippery, as you described. So you mentioned this impeachment inquiry into President Biden, and Speaker McCarthy had to make that deal with the far right to essentially launch this proceeding. We just heard their first committee inquiry hearing. And what is the latest now? Where is this going, this impeachment inquiry?
I was at the hearing yesterday, and it was very surprising that the expert witnesses Republicans called, who were there to testify about how this is a good thing to try to do, it's okay to use the impeachment power to do an investigation, all volunteered in their opening remarks that they did not believe Republicans had enough evidence to actually impeach Joe Biden, which is just not something you'd expect a Republican witness to say at a Republican hearing, even if the Republicans themselves have tried to have it both ways by saying we're doing an inquiry, but we're not necessarily going all the way with this. It was not part of the deal that McCarthy struck with his right flank in January to impeach Joe Biden, but it was widely seen, including by Matt Gaetz himself, as an effort to placate them, opening the impeachment inquiry, that is. and they're not impressed by it. A Democrat said that a Republican came up to him on the floor yesterday and said that first impeachment hearing was so bad, he believed McCarthy had orchestrated it that way in order to sabotage the effort because he doesn't really like impeachment. So it's basically a total mess this week, complete disarray among Republicans.
And do you think there's going to be an impeachment vote that the whole House would have to go on record voting on?
Generally, they don't like taking votes that fail. Like, that's a thing they typically want to avoid doing, not just Republicans, but also Democrats like Nancy Pelosi. If they counted up the votes in their caucus and they didn't think it was enough to get through the House, they wouldn't have the vote. So right now, they definitely don't have the votes. A lot of Republicans have said they don't like the impeachment effort. They think there's no evidence and that there never will be. Largely because a lot of the stuff they're talking about, we've known about for many years, and it was litigated in 19 and 20. But hey, maybe he would do that just to show them that it's not going to work, that it's not a strategy for governing right now. But I think it's unlikely.
Well, it seems the common thread here is the speaker needing to placate really just a handful of far right Republicans. And in terms of this looming shutdown, what are your thoughts, predictions? I know no one really necessarily likes to predict, but in terms of how long this is going to last, we have this dynamic where these handful of far-right Republicans are able to shut down the government now, asking for deep cuts that Democrats are never going to go for. So this dynamic seems pretty intractable. And meanwhile, real people are hurt. You described earlier about the types of programs that are going to be in jeopardy here, people going without paychecks, without food assistance, economies hurting with national parks being locked up. So what do you think is the sort of end stage here, at least based on what we've seen in past shutdowns?
Well, I'm very bad at predictions in politics, but because you asked, I will recklessly make a prediction and say that the shutdown will go for a week because McCarthy needs to go through with it at this point to show, and perhaps thinking that he will show his hard right colleagues that the strategy just doesn't work, and then he will bring up a bill from the Senate that would reopen the government, and it would pass with Democratic and a lot of Republican votes. So that's my reckless prediction that I have no actual basis for anyone to believe, but there was a little analysis in there. So I encourage people to take it with a grain of salt.
Well, I really appreciate you venturing out with a prediction there. I think it definitely sounds plausible given what we have seen with past shutdowns. And so I want to talk a little bit more before we let you go, just about the impacts. I mean, what is the sort of political pressure going to be like on some of these congresspeople if their districts are affected, real constituents are facing hardships because of the shutdown? Will that make a difference?
It will make a difference. And the longer it goes, the worse the pressure will get. You will have active duty troops not being paid, for example. So people don't get paid on a daily basis. The pain kicks in when we pass paydays, and that takes a matter of weeks. So the damage to the economy is not severe because the federal workforce isn't that gigantic, but it does have a huge effect on those people individually. There's always a promise to pay people back after they've been furloughed without pay during a shutdown. So there's that cleanup effort on the back end, but it's disruptive. It's bad for people who are looking to the stability of the U.S., the major driver of economic growth in the world. It's not a great thing.
Absolutely. It's embarrassing, if nothing else. Arthur Delaney, senior reporter covering politics and the economy for the Huffington Post. Thank you so much for coming on and explaining this, and you get bonus points for making a prediction. We appreciate that. Thank you for joining us.
All right.
On
thank
your call.
You so much. All right.
All right. After this, we're going to hear about a documentary series on criminal justice in the United States. So stay with us after this break.